It's tragic, and it's something that we're going to have to just come together as a community to deal with, because that's all we can do.
Recovery is slow from that deadly wildfire in Hawaii, but a Catholic school principal says a Catholic connection is bringing hope, life amid the ashes of Lahaina.
I think we would see the miraculous constantly if we weren't blind. I think we do see it constantly and are blind.
World-renowned psychologist Jordan Peterson acknowledges the miraculous as he discusses his wife's remarkable recovery from incurable cancer.
We need more silence in our lives. People are overwhelmed with stimuli, and here is a place they know they can come and be quiet before the Lord.
Prayer, penance, pub. We'll tell you about a young adult ministry bringing hundreds to the church. And you know him as Jesus in The Chosen. Some Lenten inspiration from actor Jonathan Rumi. EWTN News In Depth starts now.
Isn't it what we're called to do, to help those who are in need, to be in solidarity with our brothers and sisters who have lost everything? I kind of feel like that is the Catholic thing.
6 months after the devastating wildfires on the island of Maui, residents there are still struggling. The town of Lahaina remains an empty shell, and the way forward remains shrouded in doubt. But there are glimmers of hope rising out of the ashes, and much of that is because of support from compassionate Catholics. Welcome to EWTN News In Depth. Slow recovery efforts and a lack of housing and jobs have residents in Maui concerned and worried. While there is no immediate solution in sight, Mark Irons tells us about Catholic efforts to ease the burden.
At least 101 people were killed, and 2 people are still missing. Driving through Lahaina now, you'll find the same scenes of destruction, block after block. The flames have been put out, but 6 months have passed, and you can hear the frustration.
The objective fact is not much has changed.
Back in August, the deadliest U.S. wildfire in more than a century scorched this town on the Hawaiian island of Maui. Dallas Carter is the president of Epic Ministry in Hawaii. Over the last 6 months, his group has partnered with the Knights of Columbus to assist in the recovery effort. But he's disappointed more support hasn't come from larger institutions, including at the state and federal level.
You know, the fires that everyone saw, the fires are done, right? They've stopped, but the destruction hasn't been addressed. It just simply hasn't.
A statement from the White House earlier this month said, quote, more than 445 federal personnel remain on the ground in Hawaii, 232 of whom are on Maui, assisting residents in their greatest time of need. And a federal and Hawaii state initiative proposed earlier this year hopes to place wildfire survivors in long-term housing. But for now, thousands of people who lost their homes in the fire are still living in hotels. And families are burdened not only by a lack of housing, but work.
Either both or one parent have lost employment. Some of our parents also have businesses that were lost to the fire.
Tanata Lalesio spoke to us about the families she serves. She's the principal of Sacred Hearts Catholic School, which was destroyed in the Lahaina wildfire, but continues to operate in makeshift classrooms at a temporary location outside of town. More than half of the students' families lost their homes in the fire.
Everyone's still dealing with this unprecedented tragedy and crisis happening in a small community and trying to figure out how to move forward together.
But even those who did not lose a home in the fire could be displaced by landlords who are now incentivized by government funds to open their rental properties to those who did lose a home, meaning the people currently renting from landlords could be forced to leave. Lalesio fears rentees, among them some of her teachers at Sacred Heart School, will soon need a place to live.
It's really difficult because prices are high, barely affordable. It's really frustrating. It's a frustrating situation because you can't win. It feels like, you know, it's always when you're trying to get ahead, something else comes up, and it's a drawback for everybody when things like this are allowed.
With all the frustrations, there are signs of hope, including one literally left standing around the otherwise charred landscape in Lahaina. The Catholic Church connected to Sacred Hearts School was untouched by the flames. Besides that, there have been plenty of helping hands.
That first weekend after the fire, our council started collecting goods to send to Maui.
Support has continued to flow from the Knights of Columbus. Joshua Kapika is the Grand Knight of a chapter on the Hawaiian island of Oahu. He remains in close contact with the people in Maui.
In the conversations that I have with a lot of people in Maui and in Lahaina, they just want people to know and remember that they're still there and that they are dreaming of the day that they can return to a new Lahaina.
That day could be years away. Kapika says prayers and assistance are a continual need. Lalesio believes despite all the instability felt by families, having this makeshift school made possible with the support of the Knights of Columbus is a reminder that God hasn't abandoned her community.
God has blessed us with being able to return to school here for that reason. It's just so that we know he is present to us in each other, in the love that we share, in the care, in the kindness, and in the support.
Providing support to the people in Lahaina has given Dallas Carter a firsthand perspective on the current situation. And as Catholics around the world begin the season of Lent, he sees a spiritual opportunity.
It's a call to actual solidarity with our brothers and sisters who have lost everything. They are not okay yet. They are not. We need to take on some of the suffering they have.
Mark Irons, EWTN News in Depth.
The Bishop of Honolulu, Hawaii, Larry Silva, was quick to reach out to parishioners impacted by the wildfires. He joins me to share more of what he's seeing now, 6 months after these deadly fires. Bishop Silva, welcome, and you were with us right away when disaster struck. Tell us how parishioners are doing now, 6 months later, that there's been some time to grieve the lives lost and the loss of homes and businesses.
Yes, thank you very much. And thank you for your support. It has been wonderful to see the support of many, many people throughout our country with their prayers, of course, and their financial contributions. We've raised close to $7 million for outreach to the Lahaina community, which is suffering still so much. And we are very grateful to that. We also have started a second fund, which is a tuition assistance fund. It was very important to get our school up and running right away. The school building was burned, so there is a mission church in the town of Kapalua that was not burned, so that's where services are taking place. But they have established a tent school there on that property. Now, it's very makeshift, and we are looking for another building. We actually have another building now that we are going to be renovating and moving to as a temporary site for the school. So we're excited about that. But, of course, that is possible because of these great contributions that have come in from so many dioceses and individuals.
Of course. Would you say that is the biggest need, supporting tuition assistance and helping schools, or have things changed? Yes. Are there new and different challenges?
Well, that is one of the biggest needs, because it really does help the families who are whose children are in the school, many of whom lost their homes and their livelihoods. And in fact, at least half of our teachers in that school lost their homes. So they are, dealing with the crisis as everyone else is. We are, of course, many of them can't afford tuition and wouldn't be able to send their children to school if they didn't have tuition assistance. So we really appreciate that effort, that
of
funding.
Course. And with jobs lost, even if they could before, they probably can't afford it now. You did mention in our last interview together, the last time that you were with us, that you were praying that people would not get disaster fatigue because the rebuilding process is so long. How are aid workers and people in positions of care and rebuilding holding up?
Well, I think, the people who are giving aid from the outside, I think, are holding up very well. I think they're well motivated. It is, the obvious needs are there, and they're responding very well. I'm very proud of the Knights of Columbus and thankful for them. I'm very proud of our young adult group, Epic Ministry. They have done incredible work in reaching out to that community. Now, one of the things that we are looking at and working on is a spiritual mental health ministry. Now, this was something actually that we started working on before this wildfire, but as the wildfire takes its toll on people and their livelihoods and their hopes and dreams, it is much more important now. And so we are really focusing on Maui and the community of Lahaina with that outreach. So we are looking at ways to send people over. We've sent people already to work with school parents and some of the parishioners and others who are interested so that we can pray with them, so that we can just be with them.
And help them
unfortunately,
heal.
There are not enough professional mental health workers to do all that is needed. And so we are really trying to engage the professionals to recruit and train others who have sympathetic ears and would be able to just listen to people. And sometimes that's really all that's needed, is just to know that someone cares and someone is with you. Someone is praying with you and for you. And so, you know, that is a ministry that we are working on as we speak.
And hugely important, right, as the epidemic of loneliness is so significant. Tell us about what you're looking forward to. We're in the season of Lent. We're all thinking about those important mortifications of which your community has plenty to deal with. But looking toward Easter, is that something that you can really expect to have a robust celebration for? And are those bittersweet or a source of hope and joy?
Well, there is bittersweetness, as there is in the spiritual life. You know, we leave behind what we sometimes value and sometimes inordinately value. That is what Lent is all about, I think. And and that certainly is a reality for the people of Lahaina. Everything that they own and loved is up in ashes. But I will say, despite the challenges, despite the spiritual and mental health struggles, I have detected a great hope in the people. And they have come together, they work together, they have not lost hope. They are reaching out to those who are in need. And I think it's a very beautiful expression of our faith that they are rising up from the ashes, as it were, and really trying to live out the meaning of Lent, so that you know, what needs to be purified can be purified, and what gives life can give greater life.
Amen. Well, on behalf of all of EWTN, know that our prayers are with you. Thank you so much, Bishop Silva.
Thank you very much for all your support.
You can help the victims of the fire by visiting the website listed on your screen, tinyurl.com/Maui Catholic. There's much more ahead on this edition of EWTN News In Depth. Jonathan Rumi, P3, and the candid reflections of Jordan Peterson.
There's plenty of things the Catholic faith got right. So is there a tug towards it? There's an appreciation for it.
A frequent critic of the church, world-famous speaker and psychologist Jordan Peterson talks about the newfound Catholicism of his wife of 30-plus years. Peterson goes on the record with our correspondent Colm Flynn next.
So this is sort of a side road to reach a much wider audience that that could, you know, potentially accidentally discover Jesus.
And later, reflections on Ash Wednesday, Lent, and reaching out to people new to the church. The actor we know as Jesus talks about his new efforts to bring more people closer to God. EWTN News In Depth will be right back.
If I prayed the Lord's Prayer just constantly over and over, I could just get through the procedure and I could deny somehow the pain. It would help me deny the pain.
The incredible cancer journey of Tammy Peterson. 2 weeks ago on EWTN News In Depth, she spoke to correspondent Colm Flynn about her battle with a rare form of kidney cancer that had never been cured before. Her doctor gave her a grim diagnosis. She had only 10 months to live. If you watched her remarkable story, you know she was miraculously cured, healed, she says, by the power of prayer. If you don't know Tammy, you may know her husband, psychologist Jordan Peterson. He's one of the most famous speakers in the world and has millions of followers. A few years ago, he announced his wife of more than 30 years had been diagnosed with incurable cancer. Of course, devastating news to Tammy, Jordan, and their family. After our interview with Tammy, Jordan also spoke to Colm Flynn. He shared his thoughts about nearly losing his wife and the mother of his children. And famous for his contrarian views and pushback against some aspects of organized religion, he gave his reaction to Tammy's newfound devotion to praying the rosary and her conversion to Catholicism. Here is Jordan Peterson on the record.
Jordan Peterson, it is great to meet you.
Thank you.
Bring us back to that day when you were sitting in the office with your wife and the doctor told you terminal cancer, 10 months to live. What goes through your mind?
Well, I suppose the first thing that went through my mind was anger, because anger is an easy emotion to turn to in the immediate aftermath of devastating news. So, and grief is an emotion, or terror even, is an emotion that takes a longer while to settle in.
And terror, terrified of the inevitable, that you were going to lose your wife of 35 years.
Well, when you lose your wife, you don't just lose your wife. You lose the future that you had conjured up and conceptualized. You lose your children's mother. I would lose a friend, a great friend, and so that in itself obviously turns things upside down. We switched very rapidly into active mode, I would say, and started traveling around from physician to physician, hospital to hospital, as we were fortunate to be able to do.
So going through your mind was, no, there has to be a way. We're getting this dreadful diagnosis, but no, there's got to be something.
There was no reason for us not to seek out to search every nook and cranny. And so that's what we did. We traveled to a number of hospitals in a number of different provinces and states. And the opinions we did receive were that the second diagnosis was accurate and that the situation was hopeless, that there was no real point in radiation or chemotherapy or surgery.
Did you and Tammy talk about death, about her dying?
No, not really. We were so concerned with immediate emergency practicalities that the more metaphysical aspect of things never arose. And one of the things you need to do when you're confronted by dreadful news is to shorten your time frame immediately. Otherwise, it's overwhelming, right? So if the thoughts of the next year or 5 years are inconceivably threatening, then you concentrate on the next week. And if that's too much, then the next day. And you can get to the point, if you're really unfortunate, where you concentrate on the next minute. And so our time frame shrunk pretty dramatically and pretty immediately.
And even you on your own, maybe late at night, perhaps not talking to Tammy about it, but would it come into your mind, that big final question?
That'd been in my mind for decades.
Mm. Did it make you think about it a different way now that Tammy...
Well, more immediate. I mean, it made it more immediate because this particular death would have been a catastrophic personal loss. And so that brings it home in a way that it can't be brought home merely on philosophical grounds, let's say.
When Tammy started to pray and was claiming she got comfort from prayer.
Hey, whatever works.
Were you praying as well?
I always pray.
You always pray. With Tammy's condition, did the prayer intensify the praying?
No, I was pretty serious to begin with. I mean, and I'd also, like, I never and still don't really regard prayer as the act of asking God for a favor. That's a temptation. That's the first temptation Christ encounters in the desert. The devil entices him to ask God to have stones turned into bread. Well, the potential death of your wife, that's a pretty heavy stone. You don't implore God for favors. You might ask for strength, courage, faith, all of that. You know, you can't ask that the laws of the natural universe be suspended for your temporary convenience.
But isn't that the natural reaction?
Of course.
God, please spare my wife.
Is.
Don't take her. Science, the natural world is telling you her time is up, 10 months. No one survives this cancer.
Well,
no,
I think that, you know, in the Garden of Gethsemane, Christ himself asked for the cup to be taken away from his lips. I mean, it's perfectly understandable that people might hope and pray that there could be an alternative way, but the proper prayer is still, thy will be done.
Be done, yeah.
Right, period, no matter what. Right, and that's a high price, right? Because it means that things have to unfold the way they unfold, and that inevitably means death, you know, at least it inevitably means death under some conditions.
And when you do pray, Jordan, who or what do you pray to, or do you visualize, or where do you focus it?
Truth, accuracy in speech, care in action, gratitude, that's the opposite of pride and arrogance. That's a hard thing to conjure up in the midst of a crisis. When you're about to lose something upon which much of you depends, you have the opportunity to see it for what it is. And that's a way of getting the beams out of your eye, let's say. So, you know, and certainly Tammy discovered love, really, I would say, in some ways, for the first time, in a way. And that was mostly through her appreciation for what her existence and demise signified for her son. And that changed her life. So, you know, that's a non-trivial gift. Now, it was hard won, but lots of non-trivial gifts are hard won. So,
Tammy believes that light shone on her and her situation. Praying the rosary, something happened that is extraordinary, some might say miraculous. How has what happened to Tammy changed your view or understanding of what people call the miraculous?
Well, I could speak about it sort of prosaically to begin with. I've been writing in some depth about the Gospels recently, and about a quarter of the Gospels are devoted to stories of miraculous healing. And for anyone who's conventionally scientific in his or her thinking, those stories are hard to understand. So, you know, what do I make of that? I wouldn't say, for me, the fact of her success is evidence of the miraculous, perhaps any more than there's evidence of the miraculous around us all the time. But the one thing that was very strange to me, and I don't know how to understand, was that she told me about 3 months before she recovered that she believed that she would be well on our, by our anniversary. And that's exactly what happened. And so that's, you know, the fact that she survived was very unlikely. But, you know, unlikely things happen. Mm. But the fact that she survived and she predicted when she was going to recover, that's a harder thing to wave away.
Let me ask you finally, Tammy, with her deepened faith, has felt this tug towards the Catholic Church, the Catholic faith, let's say, Catholicism. I know your studies in the Old Testament, those lecture series that you did, phenomenally successful, your conversations with Bishop Barron and other people within the Catholic Church. Does any part of you feel a tug as well?
Towards the Catholic Church?
Towards the Catholic faith.
There's plenty of things the Catholic faith got right. So is there a tug towards it? There's an appreciation for it. So everybody has their own path. Tammy's on hers. I'm on mine.
Jared Peterson, thank you very much for your time.
There was much more to this interview with Jordan Peterson. An extended version of both this conversation and Colm's conversation with Tammy Peterson can be found on the EWTN YouTube page. Their interesting perspectives and the impact of healing prayer.
Wherever you are plugging into your parish, I think is really important.
A place to seek forgiveness, pray, and socialize with like-minded young Catholics. When we return, we'll tell you about a youth ministry program that's hitting all the right notes.
In this time when the Catholic Church has struggled to keep young people in the pews, a young adult ministry in Northern Virginia has attracted hundreds. Celebrating its 10th year anniversary at St. Charles Borromeo Catholic Church, P3, or Prayer, Penance, Pub, continues to change the lives of young people and bring them closer to Christ. Rizal Reyes has This Catholic Life report.
In the heart of Arlington, Virginia, there is a place young adult Catholics can escape the hustle and bustle of the city.
Just knowing that this is a quiet place you can come to in the middle of the week to rest, and during adoration you'll see it's just so peaceful.
And also be in community with other young adult Catholics.
A lot of people in this area don't have family because most people are moving here from other places, so I think that makes friendships even more important.
At St. Charles Borromeo Parish, every Wednesday, the doors are open for anyone who wants to open their hearts to Jesus, go to confession, and form friendships. This program is called P3, which stands for Prayer, Penance, Pub.
We worship and adore Him in the Most Blessed Sacrament, and we have the opportunity for the Sacrament of Penance, for confessions. And then, nourished by word and sacrament, then everyone gathers together in fellowship.
Celebrating its 10th year anniversary this year, the program was started to attract young adult Catholics in the area. Father Don Planty is the pastor of St. Charles. He explains why such a program is so important to have in his parish.
St. Charles is an extraordinary parish in an extraordinary location. It's the most urban parish in our diocese. The vast majority of the residents of our parish boundaries are in their 20s and 30s.
According to a survey conducted by Center for Applied Research in the Apostolate, or CARA, nationwide, 73% of Catholics ages 18 to 35 agreed somewhat or strongly that they could be a good Catholic without going to Mass every Sunday. That survey, titled Faith and Spiritual Life of Catholics in the United States, polled more than 2,000 young adults in the summer of 2020. In addition, only 6% of respondents said they were very involved with parish activities and ministries. St. Charles appears to defy those statistics.
Some people come every week. Some people come once a month. Some people come from time to time. Some people come back after years. But it's been steady in terms of a good 70 young adults every week.
P3 has a total attendance of about 35,000 in 10 years. In the 500 P3 sessions and meditations held since its inception, an average of 50 confessions were heard per week.
It's a successful formula, so the only thing that's changed is the people.
One of the regulars was Lizzie Warner.
St. Charles has classes on the faith. They have small groups. Mm-hmm. You can meet people through, you know, the sports events they have, P3, other things. So I think community, a rich, healthy community.
During one of the P3 sessions she attended, she met her now husband, Ben David.
I'd heard about it for years, but had never had the opportunity to come. So it was my first time, came to adoration and meditation. And then afterwards, was talking to some folks, and I met Lizzie there.
Ben David had just moved to the area to attend college, which he says was a big transition for him. P3 was just what he was looking for.
And you're kind of like a little fish kind of dumped out in the ocean, and it's very hard to find community. It's a really good landing place for people to meet, connect, mm-hmm. and form community. Because otherwise, mm-hmm. I think it can be very easy to feel isolated or also to just not have as much Catholic support in your friend group.
The Warners are still very involved in P3 and encourage other young adults to participate.
Make daily time for God.
You can't live your Catholic faith in your mind your whole life. Like, you have to put it into action. You have to have, you have to physically go to Mass. You have to physically receive the sacraments, but also be in community and physically serve people as well.
Father Don says the church is always going to serve as a welcoming home to any young adult who might feel lost or need somewhere to go to.
The peace and the joy that you are looking for is found in Jesus through His Holy Church. Seek it there.
He feels very blessed to witness such a lively young adult ministry.
Being pastor of such a youthful, young adult, dynamic parish gives me great hope for the church, not just for the future, but for the present. They're faithful Catholics. They know that Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life, and the church offers them the nourishment and the support that they need for their lives.
Rasel Regis, EWTN News in Depth.
There are three Wednesdays in the year when P3 does not occur, including Ash Wednesday, Thanksgiving Eve, and the week between Christmas and New Year's. Otherwise, attendance is robust and a weekly highlight for many. Every February, the Catholic Church in the United States observes National Marriage Week to promote marriage and the family. Brad Wilcox, director of the National Marriage Project, says his research indicates men and women are much happier when they are married.
You see is that for both women and men, the path to prosperity and happiness kind of runs right through marriage. So both women and men who are married, for instance, are almost twice as likely to be very happy with their lives compared to their single peers. And there's really no group that's as happy for men as married dads and for women as married moms. So as tough as marriage, as tough as being a parent can be, the upside to having a spouse and kids for most Americans is pretty high.
Wilcox dives into other secrets behind successful marriages and its benefits in his new book, Get Married: Why Americans Must Defy the Elites, Forge Strong Families, and Save Civilization. Stay right there. News headlines are next in the Week in Review. The shocking death of Vladimir Putin's staunchest critic tops the Week in Review. News early Friday that Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny collapsed and died in a Russian prison colony located in a brutally cold part of the country north of the Arctic Circle. He was 47. For more than a decade, Navalny had been Putin's fiercest foe, exposing Kremlin corruption and leading massive protests against him. His bravery in the face of Kremlin retaliation has become legendary. He nearly died when he was poisoned with a nerve agent and was airlifted to Germany for life-saving medical treatment. But he insisted he returned to Moscow to lead the opposition against Putin. The Kremlin put him on trial three times, and he was convicted each time in what his supporters called political show trials designed to silence him. Navalny had been behind bars in various Russian prisons since early 2021. His death comes less than a month before an election that will give Putin another 6 years in power.
His death in a Russian prison and the fixation and fear of one man only underscores the weakness and rot at the heart of the system that Putin has built. Russia's responsible for this.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken was one of the several Western leaders expressing their shock on Friday. Among those appearing before the cameras, Navalny's wife, who said Putin and his cronies in the Kremlin would be held accountable for crimes against her family and the country at large. Her remarks came at the beginning of the Munich Security Conference in Germany, where Western leaders have gathered to discuss pressing challenges to international security. Vice President Kamala Harris is representing the United States. She will try to calm concerns among European allies nervous about American resolve and support in light of the raging wars in Ukraine between Israel and Hamas and an apparent stalemate in Congress about foreign aid to support our allies.
On this vote, the yeas are 70, the nays are 29. The bill, as amended, passes.
The Senate did make positive inroads to securing military aid for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan when it passed a $95 billion foreign aid bill in the wee hours of the morning on Tuesday. The bipartisan vote was 70 to 29. But House leadership is refusing to bring the measure to the floor for a vote.
This is what causes our European allies to ask, what are you guys doing, and can we rely on the United States going forward? This is genuine. These are hard issues. These are serious issues. People's lives are at stake, and this is getting hung up over domestic politics in the United States.
In the continuing war in the Middle East, Israeli special forces stormed Gaza's largest functioning hospital Thursday in what the army says was an operation seeking the remains of hostages taken by Hamas. Special forces also say they apprehended a number of Hamas suspects. The raid came a day after the army sought to evacuate thousands of displaced people who had taken shelter in the hospital. Israeli forces rescued two hostages Monday after storming a heavily guarded apartment in a densely packed town in the Gaza Strip. Airstrikes carried out to cover the raid killed more than 60 Palestinians, including women and children. Family members of the freed hostages shared their joy of their loved ones' return.
I was so happy. We were crying, and it was a very emotional moment.
I can say that they are walking, but I believe that they still on high adrenaline, and we will see how physically good or bad they are, or how mentally good or bad they are, only when that days will come.
The rescue briefly lifted the spirits of Israelis, shaken by the plight of the dozens of hostages held by Hamas since the militant group's raid in October started the war. Negotiations over a ceasefire in Gaza appear to have stalled, and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has vowed to continue the offensive until Hamas is destroyed. Meantime, Israel's ambassador to the Holy See formally complained about comments made by Vatican Secretary of State Cardinal Pietro Parolin this week. At a reception on Tuesday, Parolin referred to the war as, quote, carnage. He condemned the Hamas attacks against Israel and all forms of anti-Semitism, but alleged the reaction is disproportionate, saying, quote, Israel's right to self-defense has been invoked to justify that this operation is proportional, but with 30,000 dead, it's not. The Israeli embassy to the Holy See called the comments regrettable. A time of celebration turned to horror after a deadly shooting at the conclusion of the Kansas City Super Bowl victory rally. While details are still emerging, we do know that a Catholic mother of two was the sole person who died in the horror. Another 23 people, half of whom are under the age of 16, were injured. The Kansas City police chief identified the victim as 43-year-old Elizabeth Galvan. A local non-commercial radio station says Galvan was a beloved host on its channel and was known as Lisa Lopez Galvan. Reports say that she was devoted to the Catholic Church and will be remembered by her fellow parishioners. The station wrote in part on its website, quote, "This senseless act has taken a beautiful person from her family and this KC community." The other wounded victims range in age from 8 years old to 47 years old. With players still on the stage and an estimated 1 million fans downtown, the shots set people running for their lives. Investigators say they believe it was a dispute between several people that ended in gunfire. The Kansas City police chief detained at least 3 people. 2 of them are juveniles. Amid the chaotic scene, Good Samaritans were quick to respond, jumping in to tackle one of the shooters.
No, no, we tackled
them. We tackled them. Yeah.
When we tackled them, the gun came out.
I just heard somebody yelling to stop this guy, tackle him, and he was coming in the opposite direction. So I just, you don't think about it. It's just a reaction. He got close to me. I got the right angle on him. And I hit him from behind. And when I hit him from behind, I either jarred the gun out of his hand or out of his sleeve. Because as I'm taking him down to the ground, I see the gun on the ground. So I take him down and I'm putting all my body weight on him. And then another Good Samaritan comes over and is helping me, because I kind of got him high and the other guy gets him around his waist and we're just putting our weight on him and he's just fighting to get up, but we're fighting to keep him down.
Investigators are working to determine if other shooters were involved. They have recovered several firearms from the scene and they're asking any witnesses or anyone with video of the incident to contact them. Bishop James Johnson of Kansas City St. Joseph issued a statement on Facebook, writing, "Let's offer our prayers for the victims of today's shooting after the parade and rally and their loved ones. On this first day of Lent, we turn to God for mercy and healing for our broken world." In Turkey, another ancient and historic Christian church will be turned into a mosque. The Church of the Holy Savior in Istanbul has served as a museum for 79 years. It is one of the most important Byzantine structures in the world and is adorned with many unique icons and frescoes. Like the ancient Hagia Sophia Cathedral converted into a mosque in 2020, the Turkish government will now make it into an Islamic place of worship. An EWTN News in-depth crew was just in Turkey. In the weeks ahead, correspondent Colin Flynn will have a closer look at the state of the Christian church there. This month marks the one-year anniversary of Pope Francis's apostolic visit to South Sudan, the first papal trip in the young country's 13-year history. The Pope had long waited to visit the Central African nation and brought with him a message of peace. But that peace has yet to be realized for many South Sudanese. In February 2023, Pope Francis made a historic journey to South Sudan. In what he called a pilgrimage for peace, the Holy Father spent 3 days with the people of South Sudan, meeting displaced women, children, and victims of violence. On his last day, he celebrated a joyous mass with 100,000 present. He also met with South Sudan's 72-year-old president, Salva Kiir Mayardit, and other officials, asking them to choose peace for their people.
Now it's time to say no more of this without ifs or buts. No more bloodshed, no more conflicts, no more violence, mutual recrimination about who is responsible for it, no more leaving your people at rest for peace.
And now, a year after an inaugural papal trip, the world's youngest and poorest country still struggles to find peace and stability. Since gaining independence from Sudan in 2011, South Sudan has seen civil war and an endless cycle of intercommunal and ethnic violence.
In just the past month, almost 100 people have been killed in violent disputes, and heightening the violence is a refugee crisis fueled by civil war in Sudan. Since April, thousands of already displaced persons, most of them South Sudanese, have been crossing the Nile back into South Sudan, only to find even more violence on the other side.
When the war happened in Sudan, I was there. Me and my children decided to go back home to South Sudan. When I arrived, I had the same crisis in South Sudan. No food, shelter, or clothes. We are suffering now.
The Holy Father's trip last year inspired hope for lasting peace in South Sudan's people. Father Don Bosco Anyala, editor-in-chief of ACI Africa, says that the Pope's vision for peace has yet to be realized.
While the visit of the Pope was well-publicized and was looked at as a landmark in the country, the kind of challenges that the people of South Sudan have been facing over the years in a way remain a reality.
But the Vatican has not forgotten about South Sudan. In early February, Cardinal Michael Czerny, prefect for the Dicastery for Promoting Integral Human Development, made a pastoral visit to the church in South Sudan, showing the Vatican's continued interest and solidarity with South Sudanese Catholics.
He said that his visit, which brings actually greetings, blessings of the Holy Father, is a demonstration of how the Catholic Church is in solidarity with the people of God in South Sudan.
South Sudan sees a glimmer of hope in its upcoming national election, the first in its history. But the country's political turmoil and lack of funding leave many concerned whether the December election will be fair, peaceful, or even happen at all. A mass scheduled for December marks the official reopening of a fully restored Notre Dame Cathedral. This week, workers in Paris began the process of removing scaffolding from the cathedral, showing a glimpse of a newly rebuilt spire. A new golden rooster, a symbol of France, adorns the top. Though removing all 300 feet of scaffolding will take several months, it marks a milestone in the nearly five-year reconstruction of the Gothic icon after a devastating fire in 2019. We aren't finished yet. After the break, we turn our attention to the beginning of Lent.
Take everything to prayer, and if you're listening carefully enough, God will give you the answer in one way or another.
When we come back, words of wisdom on Ash Wednesday as actor Jonathan Rumi tells us what inspires him during this Lenten season.
Remember that the true reward is Jesus himself, and we do this for him and for him alone.
From dust you came, and to dust you shall return. This week, Catholics began the season of Lent, a time to grow closer to God through prayer, fasting, and almsgiving. Images here are from our Ash Wednesday Mass broadcast on the EWTN network. These 40 days culminate in the joyful celebration of Christ's resurrection on Easter Sunday. Catholics across the globe began their Lenten journey on Wednesday by receiving ashes in the shape of a cross on their foreheads. In the Philippines, millions of Catholics lined up to receive their ashes, and this Mass in Honduras was standing room only, with pews filled to the brim with people. Lent is an opportunity for spiritual renewal for both the faithful and the fallen away. To speak more about how Lent is being shared with the masses, we caught up with actor Jonathan Rumi on Ash Wednesday. We know Jonathan best for playing Jesus in the television series The Chosen. He's also a partner in the Catholic prayer and meditation app Hallow, which has made history this week as the first religious app to reach the number one spot on the App Store. Here's our conversation. Jonathan, thank you so much for joining us, and blessed Ash Wednesday. I see you've got your ashes. You could tell I've got mine. You're part of Hallow's Lenten Challenge that started today. What can you tell us about it?
Oh, I can say that this challenge, the Pray 40 Challenge on the Hallow app, will be possibly the most life-changing challenge that I've ever narrated for Hallow so far. I think it's got a potential to really draw people into a relationship with a depth that I think people won't realize was actually possible by engaging through the app. It's been an extraordinary challenge for me to be a part of, and I'm so excited for people to actually get to experience what we recorded a little while back, and I've been really excited for people to get to listen to some of the wisdom that's come out of the book that we focus on for the challenge, which is called He Leadeth Me by Father Walter Chizik, which essentially is just the story of surrender. It's a radical surrender by this priest, and pretty much during the Cold War, he was an American priest. He found himself in isolation for 5 years, and then in Russia, and then in a Siberian prison camp for 15 years. And through his experience, he just came away with this the decision that he ultimately had to make was to surrender his situation to God completely and experience the deeper conversion while he was in prison. And it's just it's such an amazing, amazing journey. And I think most people will be really moved by it.
Absolutely. He's actually not too far from here. His remains are just a couple of hours here from D.C. Well, this Halo app that you're a part of aired a commercial during the Super Bowl in 15 television markets. Normally, spiritual ads during the big game have been pretty rare. Do you think it was a success?
I'd say so. I mean, we're now number two on the App Store, so I think it was a pretty remarkable effect and I think a testament to what people are really hungry for right now, which is a deeper connection to God, you know, in the midst of a lot of adversity and in the midst of a lot of chaos around the world. People are looking for a way to connect to God. They're looking for a way to connect to the spirituality within themselves, to find a deeper meaning in their lives. And Halo has given us a way to do that through these prayers and meditations, and this challenge is going to be a bona fide way to do that.
Absolutely. Well, Jonathan, you alluded to this a little bit with the preparation for the 40-day challenge, but how has playing Jesus affected how you approach the Lenten season and the devotions to prayer, fasting, and almsgiving?
Oh, it's deepened my walk with Christ exponentially, and especially during the time of Lent, when we go into our own interior desert for 40 days as we try to draw closer to God, it's given me so much to think about. There are so many aspects of Lent that I want to tackle all at once, but at the end of the day, we all have to just prayerfully discern what God is calling from each one of us for these next 40 days.
Yes, we do have to discern that very sincerely. Well, you've recently also launched a docuseries that delves deeper into your personal story. How has this affected your spiritual life, having so many people watching what you do, letting people into your personal story and that conversion moment?
Yeah. So Jonathan and Jesus is the name of the series, the four-part series on Amazon Prime. And, you know, for me, the series started with the opportunity to meet Pope Francis and grew into this journey of discovering Christ's impact on the culture around the world and through a variety of different perspectives, you know, artists, scientists, musicians, authors, and really gave me an opportunity to just experience, you know, Jesus from different walks of life. And then through the lens of playing him on The Chosen, you get a sense of what my life has now become as a result of playing this character and the impact that playing this character has had on fans of the show all over the world. I think we want to give people from all different backgrounds and walks of life the opportunity to get an idea of who Jesus was, not just through telling his story through The Chosen, but maybe people that wouldn't tune into The Chosen, or people that are like, I don't really, Bible epics aren't my thing. Ultimately, at the end of the day, that's been our goal, is to just, give people more reasons, or give new people reasons to discover who Jesus is and how he can change their own lives, much in the way he's changed my life personally.
Well, you seem to be continuing to be fishing for men, so we're grateful for that. We'll keep you in our prayers, and we hope that this Lenten season you'll keep all of the EWTN viewers in your prayers, too.
I will, Monty. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jonathan. God bless you all. And as we mentioned, the Catholic News Agency reported that that is now number one. Halo is number one on the Apple App Store. If you're still looking for some spiritual nourishment for this Lenten season, watch EWTN's new online series, The Last Seven Words. In seven free meditations, Father Joseph Mary Wolfe of the Franciscan Friars of the Eternal Word guides you through Jesus' final words from the cross. You can find this series and much more at learningseries.ewtn.com. And finally, as we look at the beginning of Lent, we take you to Ash Wednesday services at the Vatican. A short procession began at the Benedictine Abbey of St. Anselm, and then Mass, presided over by Pope Francis in the Basilica of St. Sabina. Enjoy our images of the week. That does it for this edition of EWTN News in Depth. I'm Montse Alvarado. Thank you for joining us. We hope to see you back again next week, same time, same place, for more news and reports important to your Catholic life. See you then.